Not yet? Is it working? Okay. Indians have searched for a solution to the elusive problem called tax reform. For more than a generation, Oregonians have failed to construct a solution to this problem. As Oregonians have debated solutions, drafted legislation, delivered speeches, this problem has grown enormously. But we have come little closer to its solution. Today, I intend to address myself not only to tax reform. Tax reform is but a piece of the Rubik-like puzzle that we must solve together. Today, I want instead to talk about and to make specific, workable, and imaginative suggestions for a plan of forceful progress in both tax reform and educational reform for quality. Never have I been so optimistic a solution was so close at hand. Never before has the solution to this problem been so clear. And never before have there been so much positive momentum to act. Today we see this momentum from many directions, from opinion leaders at the highest level of in our state and from citizens at the grassroots who must ultimately make the decision. Beginning with the plan I announced today, we possess an unprecedented opportunity to show the world and finally to prove to ourselves that we can solve the greatest challenge in the recent history of Oregon. The challenge is to meet the critical needs for strengthening Oregon education at every level, for stabilizing the financial foundation from which will spring the finest in education, for relieving the unacceptable burden of local property taxes, and for putting to rest the unproductive turmoil Oregonians suffer from about both tax policy and educational quality. The challenge also is to meet the unmistakable needs for further economic diversification all across the state of Oregon. And that challenge is to help the students whose education we finance to find Oregon-generated jobs that will keep their energies, their productivity, and their talents at home. Each time a talented Oregon graduate must move to another state to pursue a career, Oregonians forfeit the profits of their costly investment in our schools, our colleges, and our universities. Today, the focus is upon us, as citizens in every walk of life, to unite in answering these pressing educational challenges with workable solutions. Oregon is well known for the fierce pride, the innovative laws, and the tenacious commitment that we have shown in protecting and preserving our natural resources. Today, I want Oregonians to join me in showing their fierce pride, innovativeness, and tenacity for our human resource. We have well-defined goals for our natural resources, but we've wandered aimlessly when it came to our human resource. My plan is one more clear and constructive step toward the full commitment to our human resource by addressing the critical needs of education in Oregon. At the elementary and secondary level, the challenges for education are now as well known as they are disturbing. Far too many Oregon students start classes each autumn, unsure whether they will profit from a full academic year of quality instruction. Too many parents send their children to school, gripped by the annoying fear that educational programs will not adequately prepare their children for the jobs and the careers of their future. Too many Oregonians generously invest their hard-earned dollars in our schools, fearing that while some students are receiving full value, others are being hopelessly shortchanged. Many teachers and administrators and school board members annually waste valuable time and resources wrestling down the heavyweight school finance dragon when instead they want desperately to educate eager students. And many taxpayers, justifiably angry, confused, and frustrated by an intolerable reliance on local property taxes, find they cannot control those taxes without jeopardizing the educational strength and the economic future of their communities. In our state's community colleges, the challenges are no less vivid. Oregon boasts an excellent system of community colleges. These community colleges are the product of far-sighted Oregonians who saw what a comprehensive system of a two-year post-secondary schools could do for all the citizens of Oregon. These community colleges enable our citizens, regardless of interest, age, or station, to enhance the quality of their lives. However, as prisoners of unpopular local property taxes, our community colleges suffer from the same energy-sapping financial instability as our grade and high schools. In addition, Oregon community colleges, unlike our public schools and higher education, lack a separate, strong, and clear voice at the state level. In our state-supported colleges and universities, we must heed the warning of appalling conditions that are perilously close to reaching the irreversible. Oregon is exporting to other states too many of the best and the brightest from its higher education facilities. Years of inattention, combined with the severity of the fiscal restraints spawned by recession, have pushed faculty salaries to depths that are nothing short of alarming. Faculty salaries at the University of Oregon and Oregon State University now rank in the bottom 10% of the public institutions that grant doctoral degrees. Furthermore, Oregon's colleges and universities are suffering unconscionable deterioration bred by poorly maintained buildings, outdated equipment, and capable students excluded by high tuition. These are challenges of historic proportions indeed. Far too many high school men and women graduates without a solid foundation in basic skills demanded by our technologically sophisticated society. Schools and community colleges for which financial instability has become an accepted, if unwelcomed, tradition. And once proud colleges and universities whose quality is being insidiously eroded by inadequate attention. But, like other tough challenges Oregonians have solved successfully, these too can be answered in a manner that will promote Oregon's national reputation for innovative problem solving. I am genuinely excited about the solution I began drafting early this year. It's a bold plan that meets these challenges head on. It's a balanced plan that can be supported enthusiastically by Oregon educators, Oregon business leaders, Oregon labor, and by the full spectrum of forward-looking citizens all across the state. It is a broad-based plan that meets the five criteria citizens will demand when they go to the polls to vote on the taxation component to finance it. First, it must guarantee students receive basic education of undisputed high quality. Second, it must place strict controls on school spending. Third, it must encourage educators to be fully accountable to the citizens of Oregon. Fourth, it must significantly reduce the burden of local property taxes And fifth, it must release revenues at the state level to provide essential services to further diversify Oregon's recovering economy. The plan I'm announcing today meets all five objectives. My plan will strengthen and diversify the structure of our economy by enhancing and stabilizing our educational foundation. My plan will buy exciting new dimensions in educational excellence that will make Oregon increasingly attractive to corporate investors who will create a diversified pool of secure payrolls and a promise of lasting prosperity for Oregonians. At the heart of my plan is the strengthening of education at every level and in every corner of the state. To finance greater educational muscle at every level, my plan calls for a statewide 5% sales tax. This sales tax would be written into our state constitution by the voters of Oregon. The sales tax will exempt such essential purchases as food for home consumption, purchase and rental of housing, and basic services such as those for medical, legal, and accounting. The proceeds from the tax will be dedicated to public education. Only the voters of Oregon would be empowered to change provisions of this sales tax. By initially dedicating to elementary, secondary, and community college education the estimated $750 million in revenues from the sales tax, it will yield the immediate and dramatic effect of reducing local property taxes by an estimated 45% statewide. That is significantly more than would have been cut even by ballot two, the property tax limitation measure that responsible Oregon voters defeated November 6th. As you all know, I have never before supported a sales tax. This is a long-established position that I have held in good conscience. However, I have concluded the time has come to balance my personal philosophy against the inescapable message that we in Oregon must stabilize the finance and guarantee the quality of our educational system, that we must strengthen our delivery of diversity of municipal services at the local level, that we must diversify our economy to continue to generate secure, diversified payrolls for this and future generations of Oregonians, and we must forever eliminate the perching vulture of the 1.5% that has exhausted and divided Oregonians while consuming the otherwise constructive time, financial resources, and talents of our citizens. My past opposition to a sales tax pales besides my commitment to meeting these needs. Among the reasons I have not supported the past sales tax proposals was that they were merely tax shifts which made no significant investment in the future of our state. In other words, past proposals did not buy anything to guarantee that the futures of Oregonians would be enhanced. Past sales tax proposals have merely rearranged the status quo. This plan dramatically shatters that mold. This plan will not only generate improved basic education and buy innovation in post-secondary education, but it will also provide genuine property tax relief. At the elementary and secondary levels, the state will assume responsibility for defining and financing a basic education for students statewide. We will implement key elements of the Oregon Action Plan for Excellence. We will require statewide standards on what is taught, statewide requirements to ensure it actually is taught, and statewide testing to ensure what is taught is learned. This is a plan already written by hundreds of concerned Oregon citizens with the leadership of our State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Vern Duncan. This plan will further enhance educational accountability with parents' advisory councils, with annual school performance reports, and with school-based budgeting and accounting. I have long been an outspoken advocate of local control by the citizens of Oregon. This plan recognizes citizens and local school districts expect the right to pursue diversified objectives that meet local needs. This plan encourages the citizens of Oregon to meet local needs in education while also answering their citizens for rigorous, basic instruction to prepare students for an increasingly competitive technological job market. This plan will deliver true equality in educational opportunity in both academic standards and financial resources, regardless of where students live in our state. This plan will dramatically reduce the dependence of our public schools on the unreliability of financing by local property taxes. $700 million from the sales tax will be dedicated to local public schools across our state. This will provide consistent levels of annual financing that will permit local school boards to chart responsible, independent, long-range planning to meet Oregon's diversity of educational needs. But even as we promise stability to our schools, we must pledge restraint to our citizens. Once this plan is in place, we must guarantee Oregonians never again will be confronted by bloated property taxes or be confounded by indigestible increases in property taxes for schools. This plan makes that guarantee by including a limit on the growth of spending for education. School districts will be given a new tax base, and the growth of these new tax bases will be strictly limited to 6% annually. Never again will voters be asked to approve excess levies. If a school district requires more revenue than the tax base will generate, it will be empowered to ask voters to approve a new tax base only at a primary and general election in alternate years. Next, this plan will lift our system of community colleges into a firmer financial foundation. The innovative educational work of our community colleges, no less than that of our elementary and secondary schools, is compromised by a system that too often gives priority to figuring out how to keep the classroom doors open. This plan will dedicate $50 million in revenues from the statewide sales tax to stabilize the financing of our community colleges. This plan will give community colleges new tax bases with the same restrictions as those in public school districts. This plan will increase the clout and enhance the statewide coordination of our network of community colleges. It will do this by creating a separate state board for community colleges. This board will be appointed by the governor and represent the diverse regions of our state. This board will provide strong statewide leadership for community colleges in the executive branch to the Oregon legislature and with decision makers all across our state. The board will be responsible for setting goals, for establishing uniform tuitions, for approving new programs and discontinuing old ones, and for collecting and disseminating necessary operational data. Consistent with the clear demands of Oregonians for local control, existing local community college boards will retain their autonomy and maintain local governance of the community colleges. It's in the area of higher education that this plan will allow us to capture exciting academic and research potential that will act as an irresistible magnet for new industries considering our state for investments and for those who wish to expand within our state. Approval of the sales tax will enable the state to redirect existing general fund revenues to enhance higher education now, but especially in the future. My plan calls for construction of modern academic industrial research centers on our three university campuses, specifically a center for research in the biological and advanced sciences will be established on the University of Oregon campus in Eugene. A center for research in electrical and computer engineering will be created on the Oregon State University campus in Corvallis. And a center for research and services in international trade and business will be located on the campus of the Portland State University. These innovative, forward-looking facilities will be attractive to industry, just as sophisticated, future-oriented programs in higher education has attracted new industry and new jobs to other states in our nation. To be effective, our growing academic industrial research partnership will require additional computers, modern laboratory equipment, adequately maintained facilities, and greater competitiveness in faculty salaries. My state budget proposal for the 85-87 biennium, I will recommend money for making higher education salaries more competitive, for modern library automation, and for higher priority remodeling and renovation of higher education buildings. This package is truly a comprehensive package whose elements are carefully designed and whose components are fully integrated. I've worked for months in developing what I present to you today. This is a package that will dramatically reduce property taxes, will stabilize the financing of elementary and secondary schools and community colleges, will guarantee rigorous standards are met and equal education opportunities guaranteed for students all across our state, and will foster greater accountability to citizens who pay the bill for education, and that will promote Oregon's image as a magnet for high tech and other types of diversified industry. This package will give Oregon a full measure of economic educational yeast that will make our economy grow. In addition, it will stabilize the financing of cities, counties, and other local taxing units by reducing the pressure of burdensome property taxes on local voters. Stabilizing these local governments is critical because efficient roads, sewers, water systems, and other public works are essential to meeting the legitimate demands of industries that produce long-term payrolls. I will address the needs and interests of these and other units of local government when I deliver my 85-87 budget to the Oregon Legislature. And the Oregon income taxpayer is not forgotten in my comprehensive plan. I will address their needs by recommending to the Oregon Legislature cuts in income taxes to bring Oregonians to levels of taxation that existed prior to the one-time tax increases required to rebalance the state's budget. And I will do that with the confidence that we will see further reductions in state income tax in the future. The plan I present to you today is one that is absolutely essential to educational excellence, to economic stability, and to the future prosperity of our state. I will present full details of this plan to the 63rd Legislative Assembly when it convenes on January 14th. I will give this innovative, far-reaching plan my top priority during what I fully expect will be a history-making legislative session. It is incumbent upon the legislators and citizens of Oregon to do likewise. Never has there been so much consensus on the need, the desirability, or the timeliness of a sales tax. No state more than Oregon believes the injunction of Thomas Jefferson, who said that an America that expects to be ignorant and free expects something that never was and never can be. In the 20th century, we must recognize the same is true of any state that believes it can achieve long-term prosperity without promoting excellence in education. We must now manufacture this solution from the consensus of our objectives. As a state, we cannot afford to bow to the rancor and the divisiveness that the past has buried solutions in political rhetoric, in regional self-interest, and in conflict over pet ideas. The clear objectives of this plan, the undisputed needs fulfilled by this plan, and the positive results this plan will deliver must constitute the first priority of our legislature, who must give it their immediate, thoughtful, and uninterrupted attention. Thank you very much.
Ask.
Governor Attia, will voters approve the sales taxes?
Yes. Constitutional amendment. The rate would be in the Constitution. The dedication to public education would be in the Constitution, and a list of exemptions, some of the exemptions would be in the Constitution.
How much money is this higher education package going to cost? And are you taking general fund dollars like that go for property tax relief now, or HARP or renter relief, out of that and back into higher ed?
The sales tax itself will go $700 million. We expect to get $750 million out of the sales tax. $700 million to primary and secondary education, $50 million to community colleges. So the piece you're talking about is the higher education piece. I cannot divide it out the way you asked the question. Am I taking the PTR and using it for higher education? Because it was my intention to get rid of PTR, and so when I got my expected revenue, it had that included in it, just the same as a deduction would have in terms of the income taxes that I expect to eliminate the surtax. That was a deduction from it. So to say it's precisely that way, I can't say that. But some of the higher education comes out of the general fund, some of it comes out of the lottery money.
Will you in addition to proposing this plan, will you take the lead in actually working with the legislature, or meeting with the leadership to try and get the legislature to pass this plan, and then also to take it to the public for a vote? Will you be out there leading the campaign?
The answer is yes to both. I have already met with the minority and majority leaderships, and not just the selected leaders. That would be other members of their caucus. I've already met with them, and yes, in both cases.
And one clarification on the other question. They asked you if the voters would pass this. Were you predicting passage when you answered that?
I'm expecting it to take place. I indicated in the speech today that there's the largest consensus I've ever seen for this. It's my hope that the approach will make it, I think, more saleable to the public. And the approach I'm trying to indicate very clearly is buying something with this new tax, and that buying something is a guaranteed quality of education in Oregon. So you'll be buying that at the same time getting significant property tax relief.
Well, what is different now that makes you think that they'll support it and vote for it than when you said predicted they wouldn't pass it 2 years ago?
I got reaction. I feel fairly sensitive about what goes on out in the state of Oregon, and people wonder sometimes, you know, Attia's hearing voices again. I haven't heard that lately. But I'm not saying that I'm standing here and guaranteeing it's going to pass. Obviously, I can't do that, nor am I even projecting that. But I would say to you the chances are much better now. The consensus are more generally coalesced. And this is an acceptable alternative, at least for them to vote on.
Do you think you can get it to the voters to pass the legislature?
I'm confident the legislature will pass this or something very close to this.
Has the Oregon Education Association had any statement, particularly about the limitation
Have they expressed any reservations about your limitation?
No, not so much about the limitation. I know that they have some concern about assuring themselves that the primary and secondary education will not be shorted in the future, and that the percent of the general fund, either sales tax or basic school support, continue to be given to primary and secondary education. I think that's their greatest concern.
What about the cities and counties and the special districts? They had, as I understand, the league had won in under this offset.
In talking with them, which I did this morning, I told them that I had a choice of putting in the sales tax money and giving them a limitation, or not putting in the sales tax and not giving them a limitation, and I opted for the latter, and that they are in the same position as they have been in the past. My view was that they were working under the overburden of school taxes and weren't able to get their voices heard and their needs heard. And I think that's very, very apparent as you look around the state and see the shortage of law enforcement, the shortage of all kinds of services that cities and counties would like to deliver and cannot. And my sense was, although I didn't take any vote, that they found that an acceptable, at least to consider.
And acceptable or unacceptable?
No, acceptable. But I'm not speaking for them because they didn't say that. I'm just giving you a sense of what I feel. I think they all want to look at the details a little more.
The limitation applies to schools only, not to cities and counties?
Schools and community colleges.
Not cities, counties, special districts?
That's correct. This is. They're getting the sales tax money and will be under the limitation.
Governor, there's a $700 million figure for sales tax revenue dedicated to local public schooling. Appears to be $100 million short of the current general fund allocation for public schools. So I take it the difference would come out of general fund revenue.
Well,
we
would continue basic school support. This is not in lieu of basic school support. We would continue that, and that's continued in my budget. This would be in addition to it.
This is an increment to that.
That's correct. That's correct.
What happens if your revenue projections fall short for some reason because of possibly a recession? Will making up for that figure have to come from income tax increases?
Well, we've already experienced a recession. And all I can tell you is that if that time comes, we're all going to share in it, as we did in the past. By that, I mean that schools are not going to be held harmless in a recession and everything else suffers. I think everybody's going to have to buckle down and do what they can. And I think the history's pretty clear on that. So if that time ever comes, which I don't expect it to, at least any time that I have to worry about, the pattern's already been established. We'll treat everybody as fairly as we can, but everybody's in the same soup.
Do you know what percent of school costs, both basic and the property tax revenues, will pick up?
This would be about 80%.
80%, and that's basic education. Not that excludes transportation and talented, gifted.
State aid in total. Sales tax plus existing state aid should be somewhere in the neighborhood of 80%.
Governor, basically, what does your tax plan mean? What's the bottom line for Oregon taxpayers?
The property taxes will be less than I have a sales tax to pay. Pretty clear.
How does the dedication thing work? You're allowing schools to go up 6% a year. If sales taxes go up more than 6% a year, does that mean that you'll throw more into the reduction of property taxes, will it revert to the general fund, and by the same token, if sales taxes don't go up 6% a year, are you going to, I guess Tom already asked that question, but what's tied to what here?
I have made it clear that the dedication is to public education. In this budget, I am saying we'll put $700 million in primary and secondary and $50 million in community colleges.
Per year.
Per year. If collections become enormous or a lot more than the needs, that are out there, then that would allow us to put money into higher education. That's why I picked the word public education rather than primary and secondary. So it's available for education in Oregon. I think, however, it's important for us to stabilize the base of schools, so there's going to be long-range planning. And to me, a priority is primary and secondary education and community colleges, those that operate under the property tax.
What about the distribution formulas? Do you have any? Apparently, there's no details on that yet.
No.
Do you have any general guidelines?
Yes, I do have. With the dollars going into this, it's my thinking right now that we would deliver the money under a flat grant and not encumber the formula with an equalization factor. Now, we can do this with the large sums of money that are going in. And we're even thinking about possibly waiting. Now, I'll give you an example of that. Some districts have a lot of special education. Portland School District, I know, has a lot of blind, deaf, handicapped, talented, variety of special education needs. Now, using that as my example, then, where we may be giving $3,000 per student, maybe we'd wait it and give them $3,100, waiting in that sense. Rather than picking out those programs individually and funding them, I don't know yet, but that's generally where we're going right now. But no, I don't have a detailed distribution formula to give you.
Give the money to the districts on a flat?
Flat grant, ADM, average daily, average data membership.
And decide where to spend it?
Well, they can't, because we're going to write a law and say this is the things you have to do. They can't just, that's part of the program. There would be a statute passed describing what basic education is, and the school districts, you have to do that.
What happens with capital construction? Is that outside this?
That would be outside on the basis of bonding.
In your language, in your speech, you say by initially dedicating to education revenue from the sales tax. Is that looking forward to a contingency where you might be able to dedicate this money to other purposes?
No. No, it's dedicated. Well, initially, it was the term used by putting in primary and secondary and community colleges, and that it could be gone, it could in some future time go to higher education. I don't have my speech, but I remember
what
it, and that's what I'm saying.
The other various property tax relief programs that are in effect now. Do you abolish HARP?
No, no. I don't deal with HARP in the Constitution, but no, in my budget, HARP continues.
It's roughly the same level?
Oh, yes.
What about the 30% program will be gone?
Yes.
Governor?
Yes. Yes.
The closeness of Bellevue 2 really, I think, gave you a scare in terms of your economic development efforts, particularly recruitment and that type of thing. Is this a major factor in your decision to go forward with this plan, the impact on economic development of this property tax situation?
There were two things that finally induced me to say I'd support a sales tax after all the years I didn't. Not two alone, but two major ones. One, I became convinced, and some of you may have heard me say it, but you may have forgotten it, but the question was asked me, would I support a sales tax? I sort of sidestepped it and told you what I thought. If there was to be a sales tax, we should buy something for it. After working on this, I decided that, yes, I could go for that if we effectively are buying something for going to a new tax. And so I presented that today, buying something for it. And another element, and a very important element, was ballot measure 2. I just am sick and tired of the danger that the state of Oregon has to go through every 2 years. And I use the term perching vulture, and I guess that's about as charitable as I can get, of the specter of that up there in the tree waiting to gobble us up. And it's important then to put the whole thing to rest. Economic development certainly is another element of it. But I must tell you, the most compelling ones to me are there are other elements, but the most compelling are those.
Governor, what's the size of the increase in your budget, overall budget?
Well, I can't tell you that, but you'll know in a few days.
Well, are the sales tax revenues built into the budget?
No. Sales tax, no. Well, they have to be built in the budget in the sense that if it passes, it's not part of my budget right now, but if it passes, obviously it goes into the budget and back out, but it's dedicated. It's not general fund monies in that sense. It's dedicated dollars, very much like the highway dollars. You know, they come in and they go back out. They're dedicated to highways.
But is the budget predicated on passage of this? Is what I mean.
Well, no, I guess in that sense it's not. In the sense of being able to deal constructively with the real concern of Oregonians out there, this deals with it, but no. If this fails, a lot of things we won't be able to do, including helping community colleges, and we'll still be back in the soup again and probably face another 2-6, 11, or whatever the numbers were.
Is it your intent that all services except those specified in the speech be statutorily exempt?
That's right.
Governor, you're talking about raising $750 million a year on a 5% sales tax. Can you do that without taxing services?
Yes. Well, I say yes to you. Most services will not be taxed. But you understand the figures before on the 4% sales tax were around 800 million. So we've actually reduced the income by including exemptions. Every time you do that, there's less to collect. But I'll be honest with you, if we have any hope of passing this, and I think we have great hopes for it, I'm trying to eliminate the largest amount of divisiveness as I can in going out to the people of Oregon. And if there are places that you can escape that, I think that's so much the better, because the end result is worth that effort. The end result of trying to really get something finally together and passed, I think, is worth trying to eliminate as much abrasiveness as you can in the process.
How do you deal with the severance tax?
I do not, at all. It's not in the Constitution, nor is it in my budget. I told those who were interested that if they could come to the legislature and prove that the severance tax is higher than what would have paid under ad valorem, that they can make their case, I have no problem supporting them on it, but I don't plan to come forward on my own dealing with that subject.
When would you expect a public vote on this sales tax measure?
Right now, and I would take my lead from the members of the leadership of the legislature, but I would like to see it while the legislature is in session. I think May would be an appropriate date, but I'll really take my lead from them in regard to how they feel about it. Pardon?
On the general ballot in May.
That's where I'm thinking right now, but I would tell you that I don't want to really lock them in too much, and I would take my lead from the leadership.
If there's a hang-up in the legislature on this plan, where would it be?
What's going to be the most controversial aspect?
The fact there's a sales tax, number one.
What,
you mean what pieces of it?
Yeah.
What pieces of it?
The distribution formula or the including community colleges? Or?
Well, I can't tell you about community colleges. Unfortunately, made my recommendation, and I couldn't get to them to talk to me before I made the speech. I would tell you that community colleges have not been anxious to have their own separate board. I know that in advance. I'm not sure how large a problem that's going to be. I'm not suggesting it's going to be a large problem. I just can't answer that. Well, you know, anytime you have a new tax, and that's what this is, there's going to be some change in the status quo, and wherever that change is going to come from, those are the ones that are going to complain about it. I don't mean to be callous about it, but I suppose 100 times at least I've said you can't have a change and retain the status quo. It's just impossible to do it. Again, we have to look at what are the genuine needs of Oregon for the future, and just like I said, I'll finally accept it. I say, you know, how much are those things worth to you, your pet ideas or your own theory of how things ought to happen? Is that worth running Oregon through the ringer again? My answer is no, as far as I'm concerned.
Governor, what are you buying with this lottery money from this plant for research centers?
You will get the whole purchase price commodities when I delivered the budget December 1. I did tell you some of the buildings of higher education are in the lottery money. But I have specifically provided for the lottery dollars, and all of it is non-operational. And I will have a bill in to make that statutory rather than just traditional in the future.
Governor, having said what you've said all morning about the sales tax, do you regret opposing it prior years?
No, I don't. You know, a person has to kind of go with what their own beliefs might be. And I've gotten a tremendous amount of static from many, many quarters, and many of which are my friends, particularly business people, and from some segments of the media. But you know, you believe in what you believe in, and that's what I believed in. You finally come to a point and say, well, okay, this is what I believe in, but is what I believe in worth the result of the damage that I see out there? At the same time, I see a growing consensus. And so I say, okay, if it looks like it might have a chance, and I don't mind going forward on it, but I want to take the lead because I want to buy something with it. I don't want just to ship it over there and let you do what you've been doing with it before. So I've said, okay, I'm going to take the lead. I'm going to say I want to buy this with it, that is quality education in my state, in a total package, and on that basis, I'll go with it.
What effect will this have on overall tax collections in the state, property tax and state income tax and sales tax?
Probably would increase, let me give you my best estimate, and Rich is here and can deny or verify it. Property taxes clearly go down about 45%. If you fold that in then to our state and federal taxes, you can deduct the property taxes as a deduction on your income tax. On the basis of that, income taxes could very well go up, because you have a lower property tax to deduct against your state and federal returns.
Sales tax is
deductible. You know what? Yes. Well, okay, then, but no one really keeps track of it, so I guess there's a formula at the federal level that tells you what you can deduct according to your income.
But my question is, overall taxes paid by Oregonians will be affected how by this?
Now, how can you say that? Because everybody's different. I would say if you talk about it in total abstract of any human beings out there, it won't change.
It won't change.
Well, but see, that's not true, because it's going to change up for some and down for others. But if you take it as a whole package, it's the same amount of dollars, just going in a different way. I don't know any other way to put it. Did you put it any differently, Rich?
No, I think you're offsetting property taxes with the money. So you pay
more property taxes, and sales taxes. Okay, so
direct offsets. Yeah, but that, understand,
no,
that's not
tax increase.
You and me and all the, you know, five of us. It may vary between us, but statewide, it's the same. You're just taking it from somewhere and put it in somewhere else.
Devin, yeah, when you take this to the voters, and, you know, I assume that in your campaign to get this passed would be, you know, let's save education and, you know, and all these great things you're going to do with all this money, but, you know, people are going to be looking at their pocketbooks. They're concerned about schools, but they're concerned about their pocketbooks first. What's the selling point to those people?
Is property tax.
They're going to be paying out nickels and dimes a little bit at a time rather than hundreds of dollars once a year.
I would hope, genuinely, truly hope. In it for me, I suppose the property tax relief is the thing that's going to be compelling to them. I really hope that they feel satisfied that they're going to buy a quality education for either their children or their grandchildren, and or at least stabilize the future of our state. I hope that they would consider that as well and find that compelling.
Would you expect everybody to sit down and figure out what they pay in property taxes versus what they're going to, will they be able to compute ahead of time what they would pay in a sales tax?
No. I think the only thing they can do is go to a federal form that tells you if you make so many dollars, this is probably what you'll spend in a sales tax. But, you know, that's crude.
There would be no way of knowing.
There's no real way of knowing. Depends on how much you plan to buy. And so you can guess at it, and the federal form will say if you make, I don't even know it. I've never seen it before, but I know it exists. If you make $20,000, you'll probably spend X amount in sales tax. And
Governor, they,
use that as, I guess, as a deduction.
If the overall net of this is even, if there's no overall tax increase,
that's
a revenue collection increase, and you're buying increased quality in education, where's the money coming from to do that?
Well, the connection is a statute that describes this basic education that I talked about, which only becomes effective if the sales tax passes. And so that then becomes a state law that says this is basic education, schools, you have to do this. And that's what they're buying out of it. That's what they're getting by passing the sales tax. Beside the property tax relief, they will get a law that describes what basic education is, and all students in Oregon will get that. There's another thing that's often overlooked but very important, certainly to those involved in education, but certainly the stability of their school taxes, their ability to plan for the future, I think is going to save taxpayers, because some of them can't plan beyond 1 year at a time. They don't know if their budget's going to pass. This way, they stabilize their base, plan out in the future, and that could be savings to them as well, better education. So, yes, it taken in its gross amount, it just all comes out the same. But obviously, taxpayers are all different, and so it's going to vary between taxpayers as to how it's going to affect us. But I'm not trying to kid anybody. You're going to go to a sales tax to collect $750 million. They're still going to come from Oregonians, a few tourists, but mostly from Oregonians, and you're going to take that and relieve your property taxes. It's all coming from us.
What's the administrative cost?
I'm going to guess 5%, but I don't know.
It's less than that. It's maybe 2%, something like 15%.
So the total revenue raised, the gross revenue is what?
It'll be in excess of 800.
So the net out the schools and community colleges. And stuff.
Did you say 50 or 15?
I think you said 50.
50.
50.
1-5.
15.
That's $765.
Well, you know, we'll give you refined figures when it's all done, but our careful, you know, the best we can calculate, we have to figure out what the legislature finally does with the services and things of that kind. There's all kinds of figures, and it's still a guess. You know, you have to figure out, we're guessing how much the people are going to spend buying things that have sales tax on.
So just alteration of this plan, if the legislature does so, that would dedicate a portion of the money, say 20%, to income tax relief?
I don't think it should go that way, and I've said so to members of business. I think the future of that should really come from our general fund budget, and believe it will. And I don't think the legislature either will do that, number one, nor do I believe that there's going to be a massive effort to get that done, number two.
Are all of the sunsets being sunsetted?
No. You'll learn all about that on December 31. My problem basically is to make sure the legislature knows what my budget is before the world knows what it is. That's.
We'll tell.
I know you will.
You're going to do your budget Friday or Monday, Governor?
It's the first, whenever the
first. Saturday.
Then Saturday is when it.
You're going to release it.
Don't look at me. It was, legislature said December 1. It's in the statute. So it has to be. I don't know if it'll be. I really don't know how close it is to handing out. Friday? Maybe Friday. Is that okay?
That's fine.
What time Friday? Okay. Thank you all very much. Thank you.